this is going to be strange because I'm not really sure what I want to say. I started to do a sermon last night on Tisha B'Av, and about midnight, it headed off in that direction. So we'll see. And I'm certainly hoping God redirected me, but if not. So anyway, Tisha B'Av is next week. And for those of you who are new and aren't aware of it, Tisha B'Av is a time for the last 3,500 years of Hebrew history when bad things have happened to the Hebrew people. Tisha B'Av means literally just the ninth of the month of Av. So Av is the Hebrew month, Tisha is the ninth. So anyway, the first calamity that happened on Tisha B'Av was the golden calf. When Moses went up on the mountain and stayed there for 40 days, and people got antsy and nervous and made a golden calf. When Moses came back down, that was Tisha B'Av. In 429 BC, the first temple was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar on Tisha B'Av. The second temple in 70 AD was destroyed by the Romans on Tisha B'Av, same day. The Bar Kokhba Battle of Batar happened in 133, and that was when the Bar Kokhba Rebellion got put down with the slaughter of everybody in the city of Batar by the Romans. And then in 134, the Romans plowed the Temple Mount and sowed it with salt on Tisha B'Av. In 1290, Jews were expelled from England on Tisha B'Av. In 1492, which is a date that all of you should remember because that was when Columbus took off, Columbus probably was Jewish, the Spanish expelled the Jews. In 1914, Germany declared war on Russia, which set the table for the European series of wars that resulted in the Holocaust. In 1941, Heinrich Himmler received orders for the final solution from the Nazi party on Tisha B'Av. And then in 2005, Ariel Sharon gave Gush Katif back to the Palestinians on Tisha B'Av. Interestingly, he deliberately tried to avoid Tisha B'Av going by the rabbinic calendar. And so he was a day early according to the rabbinic calendar, but according to the moon, it was Tisha B'Av. The Iranians have threatened to attack Israel, and one of the things they have said is we're going to do it on Tisha B'Av. So that's Tisha B'Av. It is a time of mourning and lamentation for Hebrew people. And basically what they do is they get together in the synagogue, they take their shoes off, they sit on the floor, and they read lamentations, which are things that were written in sorrow. And of course, the obvious one is the Book of Lamentations, which probably was written by Jeremiah after the destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. But there are other lamentations that have been written over the centuries. And so what the Jews do, as I say, they go to the synagogue, they take their shoes off, they sit on the floor as a sign of mourning, and they read these lamentation texts for the entire day. So, as an aside, one of the things that's floating through the Messianic community, and it does all the time, is various calendars. The latest one that everybody's excited about is a solar calendar that was developed by, I believe, the Essenes. It was discovered with the Dead Sea Scrolls, and you've got a whole bunch of Messianics saying, right. One of the reasons I have no interest whatsoever in a solar calendar is because of Tisha B'Av. The synchronization of the sun and the moon got out of sync in 701 BC. That was when Hezekiah was sick and God cranked the sundial back for him. Every calendar in human history in the world got messed up at that point. It used to be that there was a 360-day year, 30-day months, and everything was just like a Swiss watch. 701 BC, it got stirred with a stick, and people have been trying to get calendars sorted out. And the Muslims, for example, just let it run. And so their calendar precesses around the year. So Ramadan can be any time from the spring to the fall to the winter because they don't change. Jews, when agriculture gets out of sync, add an extra month. And that's Adar Bet. The amount of bandwidth that got used over calendars, especially in Europe, over when Easter is, it's a big deal. And I am of the opinion, personally, that all of this calendar manipulation is, in fact, satanic and is designed to keep us separated. Well, you celebrate Passover here, well, we can't have you in fellowship with you, you know, that kind of thing. And so I am sold on a lunar calendar, and one of the main reasons for that, as I say, is Tisha B'Av, because things keep happening according to the lunar calendar to the Jews over millennia. So if you're enamored of a solar calendar, keep it to yourself. So the thing that sort of jerked me off into left field was I was watching Rabbi Forman, and he has a 5-video series on Tisha B'Av. The events of October 7th sort of shook him, as it did lots of people, and he's saying, what do we do on Tisha B'Av in light of October 7th? And he did a series of videos on it, which I almost agree with, and where he went was to Rachel's tears. I'll read that to you in just a minute. And he said that Rachel is crying in heaven over the exile. And I don't agree with that. She's crying over her own children. Judah are not children of Rachel. And if you read Jeremiah 31, which I will in a minute, you see that she is mourning over Ephraim. She is not mourning over Judah. But other than that small quibble, it was quite a good series. So I'm in Jeremiah 31. And for those of you who know Jeremiah intimately, Jeremiah 31 is also where the new covenant is explicitly stated. And that is the version of the new covenant that is repeated in Hebrews. So when you read a book of Hebrews and it talks about the new covenant, it repeats Jeremiah starting in verse 31. We're going to be before that. But the whole thing about Jeremiah 31 is it is comforting Israel for exile. Again, chronology, if you will. Jeremiah was a prophet in Israel, in Jerusalem, as Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the place. So Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel are contemporary. They all lived at the same time. Jeremiah was stationed in Jerusalem. Ezekiel went into exile with the Jews, and he did his prophecy from Babylon. And of course, Daniel was among the exiles, and he was taken to Babylon as well and rose to become second in command of the empire. So those three men, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel, all knew each other. And you'll find in the book of Ezekiel that Ezekiel refers to Jeremiah's letters and, you know, that kind of thing. And Daniel, of course, when he goes into prayer toward the end of the book of Daniel, does so because he knows that the prophecy of Jeremiah is coming to fulfillment. So all three of these guys know each other. So Jeremiah 31 is written after the destruction of Jerusalem. You're reading Jeremiah, you'll find that the Jerusalem gets destroyed before 31. So this is in the context, if you will, of Jerusalem having been destroyed, as is the book of Lamentations, by the way. So I'm going to pick it up in Jeremiah 31:15. Thus says the Lord, a voice is heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping. Rachel is weeping for her children. She refuses to be comforted for her children because they are no more. Now, Rachel's children are Joseph and Benjamin. They are not Judah and the rest of them. Verse 16. Thus says the Lord, keep your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for there is a reward for your work, declares the Lord. and they shall come back from the land of the enemy. There is hope for your future, declares the Lord, and your children shall come back to their country. I have heard Ephraim grieving. You have disciplined me, and I was disciplined. Like an untrained calf, bring me back that I may be restored. For you are the Lord my God. For after I had turned away, I relented, and after I was instructed, I struck my thigh. I was ashamed, and I was confounded, because I bore the disgrace of my youth. Is Ephraim my dear son? Is he my darling child? For as often as I speak against him, I do remember him still. Therefore my heart yearns for him. I will surely have mercy on him, declares the Lord. Set up road markers for yourself. Make yourself guideposts. Consider well the highways, the road by which you went. Return, O virgin Israel, return to these your cities. And virgin Israel here is the northern kingdom. So Foreman's insight, as he is trying to figure out, what do we do for Tisha B'Av this year? How do we process what's going on in Israel with the history of our people? And his insight was, Rachel at that point has been dead for over 1,000 years. Her children, the northern kingdom, have been exiled for 120 years. Yet it is being cited as a lamentation for the destruction of Judah and Jerusalem. So Rabbi Foreman's insight is, Rachel still exists. And she's looking at all of this, and she's weeping for her children. And by extension, she's also weeping for the destruction of Jerusalem and the destruction of Israel. And his comment was, okay, wait a minute. We're sitting here on the floor mourning on Tisha B'Av. Why are we mourning? And he says, the one who is actually mourning are the ones who went through the events that happened on Tisha B'Av. Those people still exist. They're dead, but they still exist. And they're the ones that are mourning. So one of our jobs, in addition to mourning ourselves, because you know we're in exile, in addition to that, we should be comforting them. Now, again, there's a Hebrew custom called sitting Sheva. So when somebody dies, the family, the people who were loved her, her husband, whatever, sit Sheva, which is to say they sit in their house and mourn for 7 days. And one of the customs is when someone is sitting Sheva, people from the community come in and sit with them. When you sit Sheva, your job is not to talk. Your job is to listen. You are simply there as a presence who is a willing ear that will listen to the one who is grieving. And so the one who is grieving then has an opportunity to say whatever he needs to say or wants to say or whatever. So you're not there to buck them up or anything like that. You're simply there as someone who will listen to them in their grief. And that was Rabbi Foreman's insight. As we are mourning on Tisha B'Av for all of the things that have happened to the Hebrew people over the millennia, one of our jobs is to listen to those who went through it. And the way you listen to those people is you read the things they wrote about it. That's how you can hear them. So as I just read Rachel's lament from Jeremiah 31, and similarly Jeremiah's lament from the book of Lamentations and so forth, and as I say, the Jewish literature has got a bunch more of that. But as you're wondering what to do on Tisha B'Av, listen to those who were alive during the time of these calamities. And in doing that, what you're doing is you are going to them as they are sitting Sheva, and you're providing them with a listening ear, because they still exist, even though they're dead. That was his insight. So, one of the things that listening to these people does is it builds up your community. In other words, we are all part of this people who have existed since Abraham, and that community still exists. Some of us are wearing skin suits, some of us are not, but the community still exists. And one of the things that God said in response to Rachel is, I understand, I hear you. And so God is also listening to these lamentations. So you have three parties, if you will, to the lamentation. You have the ones who are weeping, you have the ones who are sitting to comfort them, and you have God himself, who is also there as a listener and a comforter. Because what God says is, I hear you. Quit weeping, because I am going to bring them all back. All of these calamities that have happened to you over the millennia are not the end. I am still with you. I still love you. And even Ephraim, who is, as far as we know, not identifiable anymore. Judah is still identifiable. Ephraim, as far as we know, is not. And again, a small digression, there are two kinds of messianic congregations, one house and two house. The two houses are the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Those are the two houses. One house congregations, which tend to be dominated by ethnic Jews, are we're what's left. Two house congregations are Ephraim is still out there. And people who have been called to this may be Judah, but they also might be Ephraim. Nobody knows. So we are a two-house congregation. A story I've told lots of times. My sister and I came to this independently. I was in the Army at the time, and I was all over the world, and we got back together when I retired and compared notes. And we discovered that we both independently had come to be messianic. And she was talking to her daughter, and she asked her daughter, why won't you go to the church with me? And her daughter said, Mom, if I go into there, I'm going to start weeping, and I'm not going to be able to stop. So there is something that draws people here. It may be Ephraim, it may be Judah, but God hasn't lost anybody. And his promises are, at his timing, when he decides, he will get them all back. Messianic movement started after World War II. That's when it really got going. And most of the people who were early in it are my age. I was born during World War II. So there's all sorts of theories about that. But the point is, God comforts his people, and he comforts those who are already dead. So the Jeremiah passage that I just read is during the destruction of Jerusalem, talks about Rachel crying, talks about God in the present tense talking to Rachel and saying, quit crying, it's going to be okay. So all of that is in the present tense, if you will, of the destruction of Jerusalem, which means this community that we are part of, Gentile brides, Ephraim, Judah, however you came into this, that community has been building since Abraham. And all of the people in that community still exist. And God talks to them in the present tense. Now, the place that led me, oddly enough, is your past defines who you are. Your past is past. You can't relive the triumphs, correct the mistakes, any of those kinds of things. The past is the past. But the past is not gone. The past is what makes you you. So if the past goes away, you're not you anymore. You are a blank slate. Which is, by the way, why when we finally get to the new heaven and the new earth, we will be able to recognize each other. Because the thing that we'll take with us is our past. And nothing is lost. In fact, I was looking over Kay's shoulder as she was surfing the internet, and there was this thing: what things about your childhood are you really happy that everybody didn't have a camera? I can think of lots of things about my past that I'm really happy that nobody had a camera. And I'm sure you all can too. But the point is, that's what makes you you. The things that you have overcome, the things that you have triumphed, the things that you've learned, the things that you've done. So you can't go back and change anything, but it's all there. Well, that applies also to the history of the Hebrew people. All of that stuff that happened before now is the thing that makes the Hebrews who they are. When I say Hebrews, I'm saying Ephraim and Judah, both. That's the Hebrews, as opposed to Israel, who is the northern kingdom, and Judah, who's the southern. I'm speaking very carefully here. So, one of the things about your past is your experience sets you on a trajectory. So, for example, if one of the things that you did is robbed a liquor store, then your trajectory may include some jail time and not being able to get a job and a whole bunch of other things. So your past has set you on a trajectory. But the thing about Scripture is that trajectory can be changed. That, by the way, is the purpose of prophecy. The portion in Isaiah that Luke read, it says, you guys are the scum of the earth. And then it says, change. Fix this. Now, they didn't, but the point is, the future is not written yet. The future can be changed. And it can be changed depending on what you do. And of course, obviously, the one we all talk about is the book of Jonah, where Jonah comes into Nineveh and says, 40 days, and this place is going to be overthrown. And everybody, from the king on down to the sheep, put on sackcloth and fasted and repented and so forth. And God said, well, you look at that. They actually repented. And he didn't do it, which made Jonah really grumpy. But the point is, the future is not yet written. And your trajectory can be changed, which leads me to one more place that sort of falls in line with what I've been talking about for the last 3 weeks. Everybody has got stuff that they need to overcome. And one of the ways to help someone overcome things that he needs to overcome is listen to him. And if you listen, you'll find out things, and then you're in a position, if that person wants to change his trajectory, to help him do that. But it starts with listening and hearing their lamentation. Because people who want to change their trajectory have something they are lamenting about, they're unhappy about, they don't like. And that starts with listening to their lamentation and giving them the understanding that somebody cares about them. And also giving them the understanding that their trajectory can be changed. Now, one of the things that we have in our society is there's just a whole lot of hopeless people. Nothing matters, and my life is not great. So I'm going to lose myself in whatever. Those people can be reached. And they won't be reached by yelling at them. They can be reached, if they want to be reached, by listening to them. By the way, I've been listening to Ron Dart. You ought to listen to him. He's very good. And he's been talking about prophets. And he says, why would God send us a prophet? He's already written everything down. So you can read Jeremiah and you can see us. So just take the prophecy for Jeremiah or Isaiah or whatever. Oh, that's us. And make the appropriate changes. He's not going to send another prophet. And the deal is, if you make the changes, it's painful. If God makes the changes, it's really painful. For example, in Isaiah, if you clean your society up, you quit being corrupt, you quit oppressing people, you quit the violence, there's going to be a whole lot of people that are going to be unhappy because they like doing that stuff. But if you don't clean that up, the next thing that happens is you're up to your hips in hairy Romans. And that's a whole lot worse. So it's better if you fix it, or we fix it, than if God has to fix it. And all of that starts with listening, listening to the people who are hurting, listening to the people who want to change, and helping them do that. And that happens one person at a time. You can't yell at them, it doesn't do any good. So, go out and help people.